Chapter 33, Thomas Orley. Tom looked over his shoulder at the gathering clouds. It was too soon to tell if the storm would catch him. He had a long way to fly before finding out. The solar plane hummed along at 4,000 feet. The little aircraft wasn't designed for breaking records. It was little more than a narrow skeleton. The propeller was driven by sunlight falling on the wide, translucent wing. Kithrup's world ocean was traced below by thin whitecaps. Tom flew to the northeast, letting the trade winds do most of the work. The same winds would make the return trip, if there were one, slow and hazardous. Higher, faster winds pushed the dark clouds eastward, chasing him. He was flying almost by dead reckoning, using only Kithrup's orange sun for rough navigation. A compass would be useless, for metal-rich Kithrup was covered with twisty magnetic anomalies. Wind whistled past the plane's small conical nose guard. Lying prone on the narrow platform, he hardly felt the breeze. Tom wished he had just one more pillow. His elbows were getting chafed, and his neck was developing a crick. He had trimmed and retrimmed his list of supplies until he found himself choosing between one more psi-bomb to use at this destination and a water distiller to keep him alive when he got there. His compromised collection was taped to the platform beneath his cushion. The lumps made it almost impossible to find a comfortable position. The journey was an unending monotony of sea and sky. Twice he caught sight of swarms of flying creatures in the distance. It was his first inkling that any animals flew on Kithrup. Could they have evolved from jumping fish? He was a bit surprised to find flight on a world so barren of heights. Of course, the creatures might have been molded by some ancient galactic tenant of Kithrup, he thought. Where nature's variety fails, sophants can meddle. I've seen weirder gene-crafted things than flyers on a water world. Tom remembered a time when he and Jillian had accompanied old Jake Demois to the Timbremied University world of Cather Henlyn. Between meetings, he and Jill had toured a huge continental wilderness preserve where they saw great herds of Clydeu beasts grazing the grassy plains in precise and complex geometric patterns. The arrangements spontaneously changed minute by minute without any apparent communication among the individual animals, like the transient weavings of a moiré pattern. The Timbremi explained that an ancient galactic race that had dwelt on Cather Henlyn ages ago had programmed the patterns into the Clydeu as a form of puzzle. No one in all time since had ever managed to decipher the riddle, if there actually was one. Jillian suggested that the patterns might have been adapted by the Clydeu for their own benefit. The puzzle-loving Timbremi preferred to think otherwise. Tom smiled as he recalled that trip, their first mission as a pair. Since then, he and Jillian had seen more wonders than they could ever catalog. He missed her already. The local birds, or whatever, veered away from the growing bank of clouds. Orley watched them until they passed out of sight. There was no sign of land in the direction they flew. The plane was making nearly 200 knots. That should take him to the northeast chain of volcanic islands he sought in another 2 hours or so. Radio, satellite tracking, and radar were all forbidden luxuries. Tom had only the chart pinned to his windscreen to guide him. He'd be able to do better on the return trip. Jillian insisted he take an inertial recorder. It could guide him blindfolded back to within a few meters of Hikaki's island, should the opportunity arise. The pursuing clouds grew slowly above and behind him. Kithrup's jet stream was really cooking. Tom admitted that he wouldn't mind finding a landing site before the storm reached him. As the afternoon wore on, he saw another swarm of flying creatures, and twice he caught a glimpse of motion in the water below, something huge and sinuous. Both times the thing vanished before he could get a better look. Scattered among the swells below floated sparse patches of seaweed. Some clusters came together to form isolated mounds of vegetation. Perhaps the flying things perched on those, he thought idly. Tom fought the tedium and developed a profound hatred for whatever lumpy object lay directly under his left kidney. The glowering cloud bank was only a couple of miles behind him when he saw something on the northern horizon, a faint smudge against the graying sky. He applied more power and banked toward the plume. Soon he could make out a dusky funnel. Curling and twisting to the northeast, it hung like a sooty banner across the sky. Tom strove for altitude even as the threatening clouds encroached on the late afternoon sun, casting shadow onto the solar collectors on his wing. Thunder grumbled and flashes of lightning briefly illuminated the seascape. When it began to rain, the ammeter swung far over to the red. The tiny engine began to labor. Yes, there it was, an island. The mountain seemed a good way off yet. It was partly hidden by smoke. He'd prefer to land on a companion isle, one that wasn't quite as active. Orly grinned at the presumption of anyone in his position making demands. He would land at sea if need be. The small plane was equipped with pontoons. The light was fading. In the growing dimness, Tom noticed that the surface of the ocean had changed color. Something about its texture made him frown in puzzlement. It was hard to tell what the difference was. Soon he had little time for speculation as he fought his bucking craft, struggling for every foot of altitude. Hoping it would remain light long enough to find a landing place, he drove his fragile ship through the pelting rain toward the smoldering volcano.